This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at BBS Radio. It's usually live, but this week it's recorded, so there's no call-in. So please don't try and call in to give comments to our guest, John Pilger, or myself. And our guest this week, we have two guests. Our first guest is John Pilger. John Pilger is an award-winning journalist and filmmaker, and I think everybody listening to the show is well aware of John and John's work. John Pilger, welcome to The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan.
Thank you, Cindy.
I always love interviewing you. You're always so great. So let's talk about your film, The Coming War with China, which is very scary, I think. Mm. I grew up during the Cold War. I grew up with the idea of the Red Chinese and the Soviet under every bed. And it was just like a very frightening time to grow up in, and it seems like the powers that be, especially here in the United States, are hell-bent on increasing tensions between the other two nuclear superpowers. So talk about your film and the concerns that we should have for the planet, for ourselves, and for our children and grandchildren.
Well, you say you grew up, so did I, during the first Cold War. I mean, we're back into another Cold War. It's not exactly the same, but it feels like that at times. And the two principal adversaries during the Cold War, manufactured adversaries, were Russia and China. China is rather difficult for the United States to present as a total enemy, whereas Russia is always in American demonology and mythology being the enemy. It's not the enemy, of course, right, but it's easier to demonize, whereas China is America's biggest trading partner. China is also risen to become the world's second biggest economic power. And what really bothers the United States is not that the Chinese are about to attack the US or unleash a war against the US, but that its economic power is challenging that of the US, the dominance of the U.S. And so the United States has really devoted much of its long-term strategic thinking to attempting to constrain China. There are 400 U.S. bases right, encircling China.
Right.
One of the most secretive and biggest bases in the world is in the Marshall Islands in the Pacific. It was set up in 1968 to combat Red China, and it's now a Star Wars base, and most of its configuration is at China. Now, it's not meaning to suggest that China and the United States are about to go to war, but it does present us with a situation that we saw a great deal during the first Cold War, and that is an atmosphere is created of suspicion and misinformation
right,
between nuclear powers. And That means that war and nuclear war can break out by mistake or accident. It's very interesting at the moment with Trump because there's a seesaw going on. One moment somebody is an enemy, the next moment they're a friend.
Right.
There's Donald Trump sitting down to dinner with President Xi of China, enjoying the presidential chocolate cake while he tells him that he's fired 50-odd Tomahawk missiles at Syria, which that was clearly meant to demonstrate that the United States is still the top dog as far as military power is concerned. I'm sure President Xi took the message. But the Cold War is not as black and white as it appeared to us back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s into the 80s.
Right.
It's much more of perceived threats that really are transcendent. I mean, it's what is this all about? It's about the United States losing its position as the tough guy on the block, not in terms of military power, but in terms of economic power. China is looking behind it through Eurasia. It's just conduct an extraordinary conference in which it's laid out plans for something like $900 billion worth of development along its old Silk Road, so mass transit to Europe, so that it can trade across the great steppes and the continent of Europe. This is all very 21st century. It's about development. It's about countries flexing their economic muscles. It makes the United States seem almost 19th century. They don't wear the pith helmets.
Right.
It's rattling at sabers. But that presents us with great dangers. Now, Trump has just been in the Middle East. Well, sorry, Trump is still in the Middle East. He's now, as we speak, I think, in Israel. But his really unctuous speech in Saudi Arabia to one of the world's most primitive regimes was really about carving out America's territory all over again, of reminding the world and reminding China, reminding this great economic power that depends on the Middle East for most of its oil, as do the other countries of Asia. He was saying to the world, particularly to China, this is our patch. Come and get the oil, but don't interfere here. So these kind of grand gestures are going on at the moment. But again, they bring with them very considerable risk, because the always when there are military forces involved in nuclear military forces, that means danger. As we've seen in the tragedies in Iraq and in Afghanistan, the violence that we've seen already in this century, this new century, have been really about posturing.
Right. Well, let's get... talk about recently the tension that Trump has escalated all around North Korea. I'm sure that is more a posturing towards China.
Yeah. Well, you know, North Korea is a, quote, problem, unquote, that could have been solved a long time ago.
Right.
Or we are, such as the way we're trained to perceive other societies, it's meant to be some particularly insane, deranged society. It's nothing of the kind. It has a very closeted regime, but there's no question that, in my mind anyway, that North Korea would have been attacked by the United States had it not possessed nuclear weapons. That point has been made very clearly by the fact that it hasn't been attacked. North Korea, what North Korea wants is a peace treaty for a war that ended in 1953.
Right.
A war in which all its major cities were razed to the ground by the United States. There's never been anything like it, and that includes the Second World War. North Korea was absolutely obliterated, and yet it was North Korea that opposed the Japanese, the Koreans in the North, that is, who opposed the Japanese during the Second World War. And so North Korea is a country that actually is almost begging for peace. A peace treaty with North Korea would end this standoff between the United States and the regime in Pyongyang. It would almost certainly bring together North and South Korea. Now, the Clinton administration did negotiate with the North Koreans on nuclear power, on nuclear development. North Korea agreed to stop developing to stop processing plutonium. And this was going along a very positive route until George W. Bush came into power, right, and stopped it. And the bad guy was back on the block. North Korea was the demon again. Trump has made him the demon again. Of course, if there was a peace treaty, which is all North Korea wants, that would mean there'd be no need for 50,000 U.S. troops along the 38th parallel in Korea. And that's what all this is about. There's always a kind of, Cindy, there's always an official truth and an unofficial truth. That's the unofficial truth. A peace treaty would mean that America would have to get out of Korea, but it would make the rest of the world, and especially Korea, a much safer place. And as you rightly point out, much of this is aimed at China. The U.S. has installed in South Korea, its sort of vassal state, what is called a THAAD anti-nuclear defense system, which is in fact just a series of missiles that can destroy China's defenses before it has an opportunity to defend itself. So it's very aggressive. It's a very aggressive thing to do, and it's right on China's doorstep. That's really the background to North Korea, and this threat to China is really very, very important to understand. And it's something about which there's almost a willful ignorance.
Well, absolutely. I think that people in the United States really, I don't know if it's part that seriously, most of us are struggling so hard just to survive that a lot of people don't have time to check out things, or it, like you said, it's a willful ignorance of what's really happening. Try talking about North Korea, Russia, China, Syria. Try talking about Syria. And recently, the United States, the State Department just accused Assad of having crematoriums. Then they had to say, oh, well, that wasn't right. But once you accuse Assad of having crematoriums, that's all the people remember.
That's right. It's very interesting because it's what I would call a propaganda blitz.
Mm-hmm.
So if you blitz a subject, let's say Syria has crematoria, Syria has has used chemical weapons against its own people. Syria has slaughtered several hundred thousand people. If you keep up this almost this monologue, this monotone of misinformation, of half truths, no one is suggesting, of course, that Syria is a pleasant, the Syrian government is a pleasant regime, but you never hear that it is probably the protector of the most multi-ethnic society in the Middle East, a society that would be obliterated if the fanatics of ISIS and al-Nusra and al-Qaeda, which are backed by the United States, directly and indirectly, were allowed to take over Syria. The propaganda blitz is to suggest this is a uniquely evil government in the way, as we've just been talking about, the propaganda blitz is to present North Korea as deranged, as mad. Here's a bit of his particular human insanity is concentrated here and there. It's a kind of use of propaganda that allows no dissent. And what really has happened in free countries in the West in recent years is the diminishing of dissent, of real dissent. There are very few mainstream media outlets that would have the kind of conversation we are having now. It is slogans. It is this propaganda blitz. The Russians. The Russians invaded Ukraine. Well, no, they didn't actually. But that's propaganda blitz, and so on and so forth.
Well, like here in the U.S., well, I'm actually one of the leaders of the California independence movement. So I want to see. I want to say over there in the United States, it's just accepted. Now it's just an accepted truth that Russia hacked the U.S. elections to install Donald Trump in favor of Donald Trump. And that's like the only reason Hillary Clinton lost is because Russia, Russia, Russia. It's just repeated like it's just like you were talking about. It's just the truth. Because you know what? 16 intelligence agencies in the United States said it was so, and we both know that those intelligence agencies have never lied. And so talk about that, because I think this leads into Julian Assange and how he had always said it wasn't a leak, it wasn't a hack, it was a leak. And he was recently, you say, vindicated. So let's get into the whole Russia. And it's like Hillary Clinton could not have lost on her own demerits. It had to be Russia.
Yeah. Well, it's the best example, Cindy, because it reminds me of, you know, was it before the Second World War, there was a famous radio broadcast by Orson Welles.
Right.
In which he read from H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds. I think I may have this right. But he did it so effectively that he frightened everybody, frightened the nation. And I don't know, was it Roosevelt had to comment on it or something? My knowledge peters out there. But it caused something of a national panic. Well, that the Russians are coming, or the Russians have given us Donald Trump. We hate Donald Trump, A. B, that's because the Russians did it. They interfered. All this is nonsense, beginning to end. The 16 agencies produced not a shred of proof. They used the words, I believe, it is in our opinion, and so on. They used a kind of sophistry. anybody reading their reports, so-called reports, would see they have no evidence. And that's really a shocking indictment of, first of all, the media, but I have to say of people who accept that as well. You talked about your compatriots there accepting that Russia had interfered. It's the kind of pre-Enlightenment ignorance that great religious power relied upon. And it's willful. That's the point. It's imposed. Of course, the unofficial truth is that the United States has actively interfered in the Russian electoral process since the end of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And in all but installed their own man in the Kremlin, Boris Yeltsin. And the reason that Vladimir Putin is demonized is that he and his government, for all its failings, he and his government have given back a dignity and a pride and a nationalism to Russia, and Russia is now independent. And really this comes back to all these countries, North Korea, China, Iran, Russia, and the others, not a terribly long list, their crimes are that they are independent. Independent, and that's intolerable. So this nonsense about Russia blaming Hillary Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton, if Hillary Clinton had been elected, it is my view that it wouldn't just be Donald Trump's 59 missiles fired at Syria. There'd be a whole shooting war on firing at another country.
Right.
She presented a much greater threat than Trump ever did. And yet to say that, particularly on liberal circles, I wrote an article which truthout.com refused to publish.
Really?
Because I had said, what was their comment? It was inaccurate because I'd drawn an equivalence between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Well, in many aspects, there was an equivalence.
Yeah.
And there is an equivalence. In fact, I would say that on their records alone, Hillary Clinton was by far the most aggressive and potentially dangerous president, much more so than Trump. Now, that is anathema. That's almost something that just shouldn't be spoken. And this whole idea of the Russians stopping Hillary Clinton, a candidate who abused the electorate, called people, irredeemables.
Deplorables,
and abused the people that she was expecting would vote for her. That's propaganda. That's a propaganda blitz. The Russia is responsible for Hillary Clinton's defeat is a propaganda blitz, probably the most perfect example of it.
Well, not only did she abuse the electorate, and she presided as Secretary of State, presided over the destruction of Libya and the brutal murder of Gaddafi, and they did the same thing to Gaddafi that they're now doing to Putin and Kim Jong-un and Assad, that there's much evidence that the Democratic National Committee colluded with each other and with the corporate media in the United States to throw the election to her. And there was much evidence that the other candidate that was running against her, Bernie Sanders, was cheated out of the nomination. And that brings us to Julian Assange and the leaked emails.
Well, yes. Last October, I interviewed Julian, and I asked him about the leaked emails, the Clinton emails, and I put it to him: Did they come from Russia? And his answer was, they did not come from Russia. And I know that they did not come from Russia. And there's no evidence that they came from Russia. Almost certainly, they came from within the Democratic National Committee, though I can't confirm that.
Right.
But what these emails did was cast a really glaring light on Hillary Clinton. Here was a Secretary of State. Hillary Clinton was doing deals with the Saudis and the Qataris and the other Gulf states, doing arms deals with them, while the Gulf states were donating, so-called, giving money to the Clinton, Foundation, the Clinton, and which would, of course, be money for the Clinton campaign.
Right.
And in one of these, the Podesta emails, named after John Podesta, from John Podesta, of course, her early campaign manager, had said, that makes clear that she was supporting these Gulf states, knowing how much they were underwriting ISIS. So the focal point of terrorism, so-called, in the Middle East was being underwritten by the allies of Hillary Clinton, who made her a beneficiary of their great wealth. That was really the story about all those emails. It was extraordinary corruption on many levels. Now, I don't think that, because it wasn't known across the United States, would have caused her political demise.
Right.
She certainly contributed mostly to that. But that was Hillary Clinton, who was hoping to be the next president of the United States.
Well, she also skipped campaigning in what they call in the United States the Rust Belt, where Donald Trump did very well. And it wasn't because of Russia or whatever. It was because people needed jobs. They felt like they had lost their security. And not only that, but they rightly so, saw Hillary Clinton as part of the problem, as part of the establishment that brought us here.
Well, they analyzed it correctly.
Right.
The Democrats, the people who have masqueraded for many years as representing ordinary people in the United States, were in fact not. On the contrary, they were representing the interests that opposed ordinary people in the United States. And we know that. That was true of Obama, and it was true of the Bill Clinton administration. But it was probably more true of Hillary Clinton, that she represented these hugely powerful interests. She represented an elite at a time when I think most people, for all the misinformation that they have to deal with, understood very clearly that and this is true in Europe, but certainly true in this country, in Britain and other countries, that their problems lay with this hierarchy of politics, that it was the elite, the so-called 1%, if you like, protecting these elite interests that were their real political and social adversaries. She was the embodiment of that.
Oh, yeah, clearly, obviously. John, can you hang out for a few more minutes after the quick break we have to take?
I'm running out of time.
Okay.
But a few more minutes I could do. But I am, I've got to be somewhere here. It's coming up to 10:06 here.
Okay, well, that's fine.
Are you happy with that?
That's great. We can break right now. It's a perfect time for a break. Just tell the listeners how they can get more information about your film and about your writings.
Okay, thank you. My website, www.johnpilger.com, has all but two of the 60 documentary films I've made available free to watch. So that's a resource I think that many of your listeners will be interested in. It doesn't have yet my latest film, The Coming War on China, but that's available through in the United States through Bullfrog Films, which is in Paley, Pennsylvania. They have a website. I think it's bullfrogfilms.com. Film is available from there. So due to the wonders of the internet, all these things are online. Very nice speaking to you, Cindy.
Always
a pleasure.
We'll put those links on the website. And thank you again, John Pilger, for being on the People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. And good luck with everything.
Thank you, Cindy.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer, and this is the great BBS Radio.
Come, you masters of war.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. I've been a peace activist since 2004, when my son Casey was killed in Iraq. I've learned since then that achieving peace means more than just being anti-war. It encompasses being pro-environment and pro-equality for all people of all genders, religion, and ethnicities. Please join me at cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com with many other people who believe in working for a more peaceful and humane future.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Great music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
Atlantis.
Well, beyond the sea.
Then, great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs, conspiracy theories, and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. Go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Evan Greer, welcome to The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan.
Thanks so much for having me on, Cindy.
You have quite an extensive bio, and I've boiled it down to a singer, songwriter, activist, author. Can you tell my listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So I'm the campaign director of Fight for the Future, which is a nonprofit that works on protecting freedom of speech and freedom of expression on the internet. And then I split my time between that and touring around playing upbeat, political, hopeful, queer music, and trying to use that as a tool and a weapon in support of movements for justice and liberation.
When you say queer music, do you only like go and visit places that are geared that way, or are you more general in your approach?
Well, you know, I myself am transgender, so that's a big part of what my music consists of. But
right.
I play all the time in union halls and in bars and for various different social justice and immigrants' rights and other organizations. So it's important to me to bring communities together, and music is an amazing way to do that. You know, it really helps when you have a guitar in front of you to be able to reach people in a way that you might not otherwise be able to reach them.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for clarifying that. So you're also a friend of Chelsea Manning. And the reason my producer reached out to you is to talk about how is Chelsea doing? How are you doing? I noticed in one of your pieces you wrote that you had never had a chance to meet. Have you had that chance since she was released, or are you planning that for the future?
Sure. So, you know, as you might imagine, protecting Chelsea's privacy and security is sort of our utmost concern right now. Mm-hmm. So I can't comment specifically on, you know, her whereabouts or whether I've seen her recently or when I'm going to, et cetera. But, you know, what I can say is that I can confirm that she is, in fact, out of prison. Everyone should check out her Instagram and Twitter, where she's been posting some photos of sort of her first steps of freedom, her first acts after being out after 7 years of incarceration, sometimes in conditions that the United Nations considers to be torture.
Right.
So she's been through quite a bit, and definitely the main thing I would encourage for folks to do right now is just to kind of start following her, because I know that she's, you know, plans to continue doing the important advocacy work that she's always done. And, you know, her voice is really one that we need right now. I think the world needs people like Chelsea Manning, perhaps now more than ever. So I encourage folks to kind of start following what she's doing, and also to find ways to support her. You know, as I mentioned, she's been through a lot. Transitioning from prison back into society is difficult no matter what. But Chelsea's doing it, you know, after a particularly abusive time in behind bars, and also as a transgender woman who's coming out into the world for the first time, and being able to share that part of herself with all of us. So, you know, we as her supporters are doing a lot to make sure that her basic survival needs are met so that she can take some time to engage in that transition. So we've set up a GoFundMe page where we've been raising funds for her. And then just last week, as sort of a getting out of prison gift for her, I helped organize a benefit album that features some great artists like Graham Nash from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, Against Me, a bunch of other great bands and artists that are contributing music to support Chelsea. And 100% of the proceeds from that go directly to her. So folks can check that out at hugsforchelsea.bandcamp.com. That's one of the most concrete ways that you can give something back to her after all that she's given to all of us.
Well, great. And I would never ask you to reveal her location or a date, place, and time if you were going to meet. You know, I've had some security issues myself, so that's not something that I would even sure. ask you to provide for us. But I was reading a lot of what you have written in the past, and you're a very good writer, and I really appreciated the fact that you realized that there were problems under the Obama administration. And of course, the Obama administration is the entity that I don't even want to say prosecuted, I want to say persecuted Manning. So how did you feel personally when you heard that Manning, her sentence was going to be commuted? And how did you feel knowing that it was going to be in the future? I was a little tense until it actually happened, because, you know, who knew what Trump was going to, his administration would do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'll never forget the moment. I was on the subway. I live in Boston, and, you know, we sort of knew that if it was going to come, it was probably going to be that day, but it still felt, you know, totally out of reach. And I got a call from a Time magazine reporter asking me what my comment was on President Obama commuting Chelsea Manning's sentence. And I just burst into tears on the train. Everyone around me was staring at me. And I, you know, choked out some, you know, half sentence response for that reporter, and then hung up the phone so that I could call everybody and tell them. It was an incredible feeling. I've written a little bit about this, but it felt sort of very surreal, and it didn't really become real to me until I told my child about it. I have a kid who's almost 7 years old, who, you know, I've talked with Chelsea, you know, I've talked about Chelsea with them quite a bit, and, you know, they're very aware of kind of the work that I do, or I'd be on the phone with Chelsea and they'd say, oh, you know, is that your friend who's in prison? And when I was finally able to tell my kid, you know, that Chelsea was getting out of prison, that made it so real, and really, I was so inspired that my kid gets to grow up so intimately understanding the power of grassroots organizing, and knowing that, you know, through whatever, you know, small piece that I was able to contribute, it helped get this person out of prison and very possibly save their life. So it's been a bit of a surreal experience. And taking it back to President Obama, you know, I think it's a perfect example of how these problems are systemic. They're not just about, you know, Republicans versus Democrats or whoever's in office at the time.
Right.
There's much deeper problems at play here. The Obama administration prosecuted more people under the Espionage Act as whistleblowers than any other administration in history. They went against their own stated policies on LGBT issues to deny Chelsea Manning access to the gender-related health care that was medically recommended by her doctors while she was in prison, for example. So for me, as a queer person and as a supporter of Chelsea, it was very difficult to hear people kind of applauding the Obama administration as if they were some champion for LGBT rights, or particularly for transgender people, when I knew this person very well, who they were actively persecuting, actively denying access to that healthcare, actively tormenting, really, while she was in prison. But again, I think that that just highlights the reality that this isn't about Trump. It's not about Obama. It's about the broader systems that are at play, and the need for us to build movements that can combat the worst aspects of those systems or build alternatives to them.
Right. Thank you. And so you mentioned that Chelsea Manning was going to be involved in advocacy work and activism. So I don't know how much you know about me, but my son was killed in Iraq on April 4th, 2004, and One of the things that Chelsea Manning exposed was the so-called collateral murder video, where we saw the U.S. Military actively targeting civilians and being very callous about it. And so currently the U.S. is bombing seven countries in the Middle East. And do you know or think if any of the advocacy work that Chelsea Manning will be doing would be anti-war work?
You know, I don't want to speak for Chelsea, and it's great that very soon she'll be able to speak for herself. But right. What I will say is that, you know, she really cares about a wide range of issues. And I think that she's also an incredibly, she's not a very partisan person. She doesn't ever kind of toe the party line on anything. Right. She thinks critically through each issue that she chooses to take on and how she speaks about it. And so I don't, you know, I don't want to speak for her, and I don't know specifically what she plans to work on, but I know that she, you know, cares very deeply about making sure that the public is able to be aware of what our government is doing in our name. I think that, you know, we'll certainly be hearing from her about issues of foreign policy, among many other issues as well. But I think, you know, she, it's important to her that she's not defined only by, you know, this thing that happened 7 years ago, because she's done quite a lot since then. Also, you know, she has, she wrote alternative cybersecurity legislation while she was in prison. She has become a strong advocate around transgender rights and prison issues and healthcare and a wide variety of other things. So I definitely think, you know, we'll be hearing from her about that. But I think it's important to recognize, you know, she's sort of a whole person and not just, you know, a, you know, capital W whistleblower, or capital H hero. Like I think often a lot of people, we have a tendency as a society to sort of put people on a pedestal or pigeonhole them into one thing. And I'm very fortunate to have been able to actually, you know, get to know Chelsea a little bit and speak to her on the phone. And you know, soon everyone will have a lot more of that ability to get to know what kind of person she is. But I think I just can't wait for that. You know, she's really an incredible person, and it'll be great for people to be able to see her as a full human being with a variety of thoughts and ideas, and not just as sort of one, you know, sort of a monolith of what she was arrested for, essentially.
Well, tell us about this cybersecurity, because as I'm going over your website, it looks like your organization is very focused on that. And so let's just talk about you and your work right now.
Sure. Yeah, so Fight for the Future, as I mentioned, is a nonprofit that works on issues of freedom of speech and freedom of expression as they relate to technology and the internet. So we're probably best known for organizing some of the largest online protests in history against SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, which could have led to widespread internet censorship in the United States and around the world. We led the campaign for net neutrality last year, preventing internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon from controlling and manipulating what you can see and do on the internet. And we're very much back in the trenches on that issue now. The Trump administration's pick for the new chairman of the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has been actively working to dismantle those free speech protections that millions of people fought for in 2014 and 2015. And so we're very much trying to defend those rules, trying to defend those protections, which, again, keep the internet as a level playing field for such a vibrant diversity of opinions and ideas and exchange of information, rather than being sort of locked down like cable TV, where the only voices that we get to hear are those that can afford to pay, essentially. So that's, you know, to me, very important, because I'm like Chelsea, I'm someone that cares about a wide range of issues. And it'd be difficult for me to decide just one of them to work on every day. But working to protect the internet feels like I'm protecting this powerful tool that is important for all the different movements that I care about, and, you know, is just a basic necessity at this point that gives ordinary people power that we've never had in the past. So for me, that's kind of the core of it. It's not just about cat videos and Netflix and, you know, funny GIFs. It's actually about protecting this transformative tool that has given us more potential for democracy than I think we've ever had throughout history, but also can be used for tremendous evil, as we've seen with mass government surveillance of the kind that Edward Snowden exposed, for example.
Right.
So it really is a battle over the future of this technology and whether it's going to be used for freedom or for tyranny. That's where Fight for the Future sort of finds itself at the moment, is trying to rally the internet to defend itself from being used as a tool for tyranny, a tool for dictatorship, a tool for censorship, a tool for surveillance, and rather have it be a tool for liberation, for freedom, for sharing, for creativity.
Well, thank you. I think that, is there anything you'd like to add? I really want you to go back over the website where Chelsea Manning can be supported and where people can support you and your work.
Sure. So you can find me online. You know, again, my name's Evan Greer, E-V-A-N-G-R-E-E-R. I'm in all the usual places. My organization is Fight for the Future, and you can find us at fightforthefuture.org. For Chelsea, there's a GoFundMe page set up. So if you just search for Chelsea Manning GoFundMe, that's one way that you can contribute directly to her. And if you're interested in getting some music, again, you know, music with progressive ideas and political content, as well as just, you know, great tunes to enjoy and support Chelsea at the same time, you can pick up the Hugs for Chelsea benefit album at hugsforchelsea.bandcamp.com.
Great, Evan Greer. Thank you so much for being on the People Speak with Cindy Sheehan and giving us this very important update.
Thanks so much, Cindy. I really appreciate you having me on, and thanks for all the work that you do.
Thank you.
Ya bastard, enough is enough. Ya bastard, enough is enough. You ask why are we angry, I say look at history. The cause of all our troubles, it is not a mystery. There are those whose lives are easy, there are those whose lives are rough. Now is the time for us to rise and cry out. Enough is enough borders, enough nations, enough corporate exploitation, enough racist air pollution, enough racist institutions, enough chains and enough cages, and enough starvation wages, enough highways and gas stations, enough control by corporations. We won't take it anymore. Yeah, this is class war. We'll fight you in the streets and we will dance on your defeat. Ya basta. Ya basta. I swear to you there'll be a day when the melting pot will boil. You only bring us closer with each war you make for oil. Each union that you break and each ballot box you stuff brings us closer to the day when we will cry out. Enough is enough greedy politicians, enough gender role traditions, enough hierarchies, enough of living on our knees, enough gouging of the planet, enough destruction of the earth, enough tearing of her flesh to see what the insides might be worth. We won't take it anymore. Yeah, this is class war. We'll fight you in the streets and we will dance on your defeat. Ya basta. Ya basta. All around the world, the people are fighting back. Each day another shard of the system starts to crack. Narentina and Chiapas with our rage and with our love. The people are all crying out. Enough is enough war and occupation. Enough propaganda stations, enough enforced reality, enough police brutality, and enough nuclear arms. Yeah, enough factory farms, enough stolen women's choices, enough silenced women's voices. We won't take it anymore. Yeah, this is class war. Fight you in the streets and we will dance on your defeat. Ya basta. Ya basta. Cause enough words have been said, enough songs have been sung, enough protests have been had, enough banners have been hung. We are many, they are few. There is so much we can do when we use what we have learned and fight them on our own terms. Because they need us, yeah, we don't need them. It's our sweat and labor on which they all depend. They need us to drive their trucks, they need us to shine their crowns, they need us to be the cops who beat our comrades down. But what good are all their laws? No one to institute them. What good are all their guns if there's no one there to shoot them? We can shove ballots down our throats to soothe our affliction, but that won't do a bit of good till we are cured of our addiction. Because Bush is just a cough and carries just a sneeze. Symptoms of a disease known as free market economy.
That's this week's edition of The People Speak with Cindy Sheehan. I'd like to thank Donald Newsom, who is from BBS Radio and also the engineer on this show. I'd like to thank him for providing us the space to have such wonderful guests as John Pilger and Evan Greer. Please check out their websites. I'd like to also thank Mike Kim, who produces the show and helps me get such amazing guests. Our guest next week will be David Swanson, who is my friend and a dedicated anti-war activist. And we're going to close out the show with a song called Ya Basta by Evan Greer, used with his permission. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The People Speak with me. Peace out for now.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.